This podcast was recorded on the lands of the Boon Wurrung people of the Kulin Nation, the land on which we're lucky enough to raise our sons and daughters. Always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
This episode of Ready or Not is brought to you by the Inara, a premium online shopping and lifestyle publication tailored for pregnancy, motherhood and beyond.
I went from being a really strong, independent woman to all of a sudden feeling like I barely on days had my head above water. By putting myself last or ignoring my needs or saying it doesn't matter or not creating a space for me, I diminish my space in the family. The biggest thing that held me back, I think, my entire life from having kids was that default parenting. I think the hardest thing about becoming a mum is there is very little of who you were that gets left. And there's so much love wrapped around it, but there's also just so much pressure.
Natasha Heger had been with the company she worked at for 10 years before she went on parental leave. And just the day before she was originally due to return, she was made redundant. What followed was a longer than anticipated break from the workforce and a search for a new role, but this time not just as Natasha, but as mum too. Not one to settle for any old role, which is such a common experience for mothers who feel like they don't have much choice. She was instead set on finding a workplace that understood and valued the work of a mother. And as someone who admits to having some dark moments in motherhood, she's incredibly candid when she reflects on those early days. Here, we talk about why she wasn't so sure she wanted children, what happened when she was made redundant, how she went about finding paid work, and how she, even as a mother who engages in full-time paid work, finds the time to look after herself and her health. I'm Lucinda, this is Ready or Not, and here is the wise and whip smart, Natasha Heger. Natasha, you were made redundant the day before you were due back from maternity leave. How on earth did you feel in that moment?
It was honestly gut-wrenching. I'd been with the company for 10 years and I was one of their top employees. I literally received an award for best performance the day, like a week or two before I'd gone on maternity leave. And they made sure that while I was on maternity leave, like, you know, they communicated how excited they were to have me and checked in and, you know, wanted photos of the baby. And then they sort of started to ghost me come January, which I thought was a bit strange. I was due back mid-April of 2022. And the more I tried to get in contact to sort of finalize my return to work, the more they just never responded or got back to me. And I was constantly chasing up. And I finally got an email, which was actually one day after my birthday, but the day before I was made redundant, saying there's a Zoom meeting to discuss my return to work. And then when I logged into the Zoom meeting and I saw the general manager and the HR, I'm like, I know exactly what's going to happen.
If anyone could see, they would have just seen that my mouth was open for most of that time. And I do want to unpack that, but I've really got listeners on tender hooks opening with that. But now I'm going to take it back. Can you walk us through your career before motherhood?
Yeah, so I started like any sort of 18-year-old, you head into uni with the expectation of what the great, big, great, wide world's going to be and what you're going to do. And I chose law, which after I think potentially a year, I ducked out of it pretty quick. It was so dry and just not what I wanted to do. And there was an element of lifestyle. I just thought, oh my God, all I'm going to be doing is chained to a desk, you know, 12 to 14 hours a day. I didn't want to do that. And my other passion at that time was health. And I thought going into GP or anything medical related would be similar. You know, you'd pretty much take 8 years to get a degree, you'd be chained to a desk and just wouldn't be a lifestyle I was quite into. So I quite literally stumbled into Endeavour College of Natural Medicine. It's in the city and I was shopping in Melbourne Central and I just
literally stumbled in.
And had a chat to the guys at the office and thought, you know, naturopathy could be something I really I really like. I like diet. I like lifestyle. I like the whole how the human body works. And yeah, 4 years later, I graduated as a naturopath. I did go into clinical practice. I worked for a lovely lady called Siobhan Clayson. She had a beautiful natural medicine clinic in High Street Armidale called Salus, and I was one of her reception girlies and dispensary techs. And then when she moved to Perth, I essentially carried on in another role as within pharmacy. And I ran the natural medicine clinic within a pharmacy. And I was approached by my previous company to come and work as a field sales rep for them and to basically educate doctors, other naturopaths, allied health care professionals as to our products and why in certain instances, you know, they were better than traditional Western medicine. And it was a job I really, truly, truly loved because, you know, you have the opportunity to really engage at the front line with GPs and convince them that, you know, do not give someone an antibiotic, perhaps potentially do not give them an antidepressant script or, you know, some heavy sleeping drugs. You could try these natural medicine products, which were really beautifully evidence-based. And your patients would get, you know, really good results with their side effects. And so, yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed that. So when I was made redundant, it was heartbreaking because I really felt like what I was doing wasn't really making that difference. I was really helping in the front lines to change the landscape of how medicine and natural medicine is perceived in Australia.
And you've been there for so long, so I cannot imagine what a kick in the guts that felt like. So you originally didn't know if you wanted to have children. Can you tell us a little bit about that and what perhaps changed your mind, or if it was more just sort of a gut feeling that changed one morning?
We had such a major change in our lives when we all went through COVID. And, you know, there was an element where prior to COVID, both my husband and I, we had those really full lives with friends and, you know, traveling the world and going to beautiful restaurants. And it was just, you know, going to the gym and we had our work and it was really full.
Yeah, that all sounds really good now that you're saying it.
I know, you look back and you're like, what was I thinking? So yeah, we got to the kind of, I don't know, third or fourth lockdown, and then being so quiet and so lonely and the house was empty. And, you know, you didn't have the busyness of life, you got to really look at your relationship and you really got to look at what you had. And, you know, when you strip it back and you've got you and your partner, and we had our beautiful French bulldog at the time, there was just an element missing. You know, you just kind of wanted a bit more noise and you wanted a bit more chaos and you wanted a bit more joy, for lack of a better word, or you had more love to give. And I was always hesitant because I knew the demand and the work would be on me. And it was many conversations my husband and I had where I didn't genuinely want to be the default parent, but I knew that would always happen. It always does for women, no matter how supportive your partner is.
Like the bare bones of it, you're the one that carries and gives birth. If everything else is even, that's still a huge undertaking, isn't it?
Oh my God, I was friends with these two beautiful women that had their first baby. And the pregnant partner and the non-pregnant partner. The non-pregnant partner actually enabled herself to breastfeed. And I was just like, I really wish I was in a same-sex relationship. It really handy right now.
It's incredible.
So they were both able to share, yeah, the breastfeeding duties, which is, but we've totally sidetracked now.
Great story though.
We just decided we'd give it a go. There was no expectations too, and I think that was quite nice. So we had no expectations. It was sort of like, we'll give it a go. If it happens for us, it happens. If it doesn't happen for us, it doesn't. And I think sometimes that mindset's quite good too, because you take the stress of it. And I was quite lucky. We fell pregnant within 4 to 5 months of trying. And again, that was thanks to, you know, little tips from friends like ovulation sticks. Had no idea they existed. And then, you know, you get on the ovulation sticks and you then, you know, schedule in your sex.
It becomes quite arduous, doesn't it?
So romantic. Oh my God. Making a baby is not romantic.
No, it's definitely not. Not me, my experience either. Before we get to your pregnancy, I think I probably did a lot of, without even realizing, a lot of that sort of spiritual thinking during COVID. Do you think there was an element of that, of like what matters and family matters and all those sorts of things?
Oh, absolutely. It was so amazing. Just that moment to, I really enjoyed COVID and the lockdowns. I think for a lot of us, we had reached such an epic stage of burnout that we just didn't realize. And yeah, there was that element, there was that moment where you could reflect and potentially shift priorities and look at your life and look at what you have and, yeah, go down that sort of, is my work fulfilling me? Like, is it my purpose?
So how did pregnancy go for you? You had this busy job where you were climbing the corporate ladder. How were you feeling?
I had such a good pregnancy. I was super, super lucky. I think it had a lot to do with sort of my knowledge and my background. And I relied heavily on a lot of practitioners that I knew. So, you know, I knew good pregnancy osteopaths, I knew good pregnancy Pilates instructors and physiotherapists. And I had a really good obstetrician in Len Kleeman. And I just felt really supported. And I know it came from an area of privilege because we could afford private health insurance. I could afford to go to a really good hospital. I was living in Fitzroy, so we were going to Epworth. So a 5-minute walk for me at the best of times. We had fertile ground down the road. So I was really living in a position of privilege where I was so well looked after. And I also made the time to look after myself, because I knew it wasn't necessarily the pregnancy I'd have to prepare for. It was going to be that postpartum period.
So as someone, and I might be making a total assumption here, as someone that wasn't necessarily set on the idea of having kids, do you think this made you any more nervous at all during pregnancy of what your life would look like? Or do you think once you'd made that decision, that was made and you were embracing this new normal?
My husband and I had many chats, because the biggest thing that held me back, I think, my entire life from having kids was that default parenting. I knew, I saw it go through my mum, I saw my friends go through it. I just didn't want that load of having to be the parent that looked after the house, the food, the cooking, the baby, the childcare. You know, it's a lot. And I wanted to focus a lot on what I was doing and where my career was. I think I had the assurance of my partner that that wouldn't happen, and it did.
Interesting. So we'll have to get to that. When we were emailing about this, you said to me via email that you don't think you had postnatal depression, but that some of your feelings were dark, overwhelming, and intertwined with grief, anger, loneliness, and resentment, which I think is something that so many mothers can resonate with. Can you tell us a bit about those early days of parenting and these experiences?
I think the hardest thing about becoming a mum is your life just changes completely. There is very little of who you were that gets left. Having a baby is so all-consuming. You know, you pivot to a point where the way they sound when they're sleeping to, you know, the color of their poo to, are they getting enough milk? And it's so all consuming. I think you think you understand what that's going to look like, but you don't. it just changes. And the hardest thing for me is, you know, I went from being a really strong, independent woman to all of a sudden feeling like I barely on days, you know, had my head above water. It sometimes felt really like you were, oh, getting a bit emotional, like you're really struggling and you have to learn to swim again. And it's not even a case of, you know, oh, she'll be all right. You have this thing that you just love infinitely and you want to make sure that everything you do is perfect. And sometimes that sense of, you know, I need to protect and I need to create this loving and nurturing and, you know, do everything in my power to make this baby's life perfect means that there's very little that you can control. And you tend to sometimes spiral, and it takes, plus, you know, you're recovering from the birth.
Pregnancy.
Yeah, you might have a supportive partner, and I really hope that most people do. I mean, women that get to a stage where they don't find partners and decide to do it on their own, they are my absolute heroes, because I just don't know how you can do this without, not even a, like just a partner, someone who can hand the baby to and walk yes. away for half an hour. Because it is, it's, you've got emotions flying everywhere, you know, you have a massive drop in progesterone and estrogen, the hormones from pregnancy are leaving, you've got a surge in lutein, like you literally are in this crazy vortex. But yeah, there's definitely lots of moments where you have this beautiful baby, but there are moments you're just clinging with your, you know, clawing your hands in the dirt and just taking one step at a time. And it can last for a long time.
So you mentioned hormones there, and that was a huge one for me. It was, I think, those hormone shifts in the early days and my milk coming in and the sheer terror or the overwhelming feeling of responsibility and that overwhelming sense of love that you talk about and all of the fears that are wrapped up in loving and caring about something so much. Did you experience that, like the weight of, oh my God, I knew this would be big, but it's bigger than I thought it would be?
You can't even describe it. You genuinely can't even describe it. It's overwhelming. Like, you know, you're barely coming up for air. You go to bed thinking, you wake up thinking every single moment of your day is all consumed by the baby.
Yeah.
And there's so much love wrapped around it, but there's also just so much pressure.
Especially in those early days.
Particularly for your first baby. I think when you have your second baby, it's potentially maybe not as overwhelming, still ginormous, but there's a little bit that you can let go and a little bit that you've learned that doesn't matter as much.
Yes.
But that first baby, everything matters. Everything. The tiniest thing matters. You know, how much formula, you measure it precisely. The water is precise. You time your breastfeeds, right breast, left breast, right breast, 20 minutes, you know, and the birth, everything matters.
Like, it's amazing when you look back, and I am about to do it for a second time, and I do think there's a lot of comfort in hindsight, so I agree with that, and I'll have to report back. So obviously your maternity leave didn't plan out exactly how you thought it would look, but what did it look like for you in terms of how long you planned to take off? And also just how you felt as your postpartum continued, if those feelings started to dissipate once you felt like you got a handle on motherhood isn't quite the right phase. But once you sort of feel like those wheels are a little bit more in motion, did you feel like things started to get less overwhelming?
I don't think for any mum things become less overwhelming. I just think you start to learn what is important and what isn't. And on any given day, they could be different. So, you know, one day getting a really healthy, nutritious dinner is very important, but that doesn't mean the next day fish sticks and some peas are a bad dinner. Like, you just become better at managing what you can control and letting the stuff you can't control go and learning to switch that off. And that's not an easy process. I have a 2.5-year-old and I'm still, every day you learn and you change the juggle and you manage it a bit better. So initially I wanted to take a year off. I thought a year was, you know, a nice time. And I then was made redundant sort of a day before that year's leave was up. So I then had sort of unlimited time. We ended up going to court and I ended up getting a larger settlement than what I was originally offered, thanks to that process. So I was able to take sort of an extended 6 months. But what I essentially wanted to do is I ended up putting Archie in childcare 2 days a week so that I could have 2 days to myself. And that was sort of from a year to 16 months, 18 months, which was actually quite nice. And I think that's really when I started to probably get a lot better in terms of how I felt mentally about myself. And, you know, started to make the physical changes necessary, like going to the gym, eating a bit better, meal prepping, and really using those 2 days to start a structure and routine that when I got back to work, I would have the foundation to continue, you know, potentially working full time and then a child in childcare and being a mother.
Redefining how modern mothers consume content, the Inara offers a diverse range of features, interviews, and fashion edits that cater to every stage of motherhood while celebrating individual style and identity. And today we're bringing our Ready or Not listeners a special offer as the Inara gets ready to launch their styling services. To claim 30% off a styling experience that can be done virtually or in person in Sydney and is specifically tailored to those who are pregnant, postpartum, or just struggling to define their style as a mother, email hello@theinara.com and mention Ready or Not. That's Inara, spelled I-N-A-R-R-A. Natasha and I actually talk about clothing and styling in the second half of this interview, so it couldn't be more timely that the Inara is here to help.
That's such a gift. I wish that every primary caregiver got that space in the lead up to return to work. What was it like looking for a job as a mother? Often it's much easier, even if the job's not perfect, it's a lot easier to go back to where you were because there's comforts there. You've perhaps proved yourself, you know, the team, all of that. That obviously was taken off the table for you. What was it like looking for a job?
It wasn't easy. It took a lot longer than I anticipated, and I also took a lot longer than I anticipated because I'm obviously in a very niche category, in a very niche area of specialization. But one of my main focus was I did want to be employed by a company that valued their employees and valued mothers and valued women and didn't just talk about it and pretend it. You could physically see it constantly evolving and changing and working in the workforce. And so I did my research. I looked at the top places for women to work. And then through that, I basically said, these are the different companies where I could potentially work. And I applied to those. So I'm obviously now with Swiss, which I think, I think we maybe mentioned it. I don't know if we did. And I cannot rate it highly enough. I mean, if there's one bit of advice I could ever offer any woman, is that if you're not happy with your current employer, whether you're pregnant, whether you're in, you know, you're on maternity leave or you've gone back and it's not working for you, look for something else because there are better things out there and it would make a world of difference on you mentally, physically, and emotionally having that level of care by your employees because they do exist. There are employees out there that like hiring mums because they find us efficient. They find us direct and to the point. They find us, you know, that we typically work through our breaks, which is not ideal, but, you know, we've got stuff we need to do. So we get the work done and then we go get our babies and we're an efficient workforce.
We are an efficient breed. I could not agree more. What was it like starting at a new job as a mother? I guess from the get-go, you'd really laid out a foundation of wanting to work somewhere that would really support you. So hopefully that helped. But what was it like?
When I had gone through the interview process, I made it very clear that I had a child and that I was a first-time mum. So I didn't quite know where it was all going to work and how it was all going to fit in. I was very lucky in that they were constantly being really reassuring to me, going, we have a lot of mothers. The team you're going to be working with, most of the mothers have babies in your age group. And they do. I think all our kids are under the age of 4. So we really know where, you know, it would be funny. I'll be like, oh no, Archie's down with gastro. And in 2 days later, yep, I've got gastro too. Yep.
Yeah. Oh, that stuff spreads like wildfire.
And what, like, you just know that having that environment and having those other women that are really supportive is really good. I was also super, super lucky with my mother's group. I think mother's groups are very hit or miss for a lot of people. I find it very daunting at first meeting new people and making friends. And so, yes, starting at Swiss was incredibly daunting. It was like that first day of school and, you know, you're a little nervous, Nelly, with your lunchbox. But if you are in the right place, that quickly goes. You know, you do feel welcomed, you do feel supported, you do feel heard. And I would really encourage that if that's not something you have, it's in your power to change and you should try. Like, even if it takes you 6, 8, 9 months to change that, change it. You know, it's a change for the better, and it relieves so much pressure and stress off yourself when you have that supportive environment.
And so you work there full time. Did you start off full time or did you build up?
No, I wanted to get back to work.
Yeah. Was it a shock to the system at all, or was it quite enjoyable?
Oh, it was so enjoyable. I tell you what, it was so enjoyable. It felt like a holiday in the first month of work. It felt fantastic. I was like, who am I? I'm not wearing my gym gear and my hair's washed and makeup on. I have time to have a coffee without, you know, someone clinging on me.
You did say that the load has fallen on you perhaps more so.
Yes.
But I'm imagining both of you and your partner work full time. So how do you make it work from a logistical and mental load point of view?
We wake up early. I mean, that's become something that's sort of non-negotiable. We have to wake up early so that we can sort of set ourselves up for the day. And we typically try to wake up, you know, half an hour to 45 minutes before Archie gets up so that we can have a coffee, we can have a debrief as what our days look like, we can have that shower, we can get ourselves, you know. And I always laugh. It's like, you know, in when you're in the plane and they're like, please put your oxygen mask on first and then the babies. It's that kind of environment. Unfortunately, my husband's just, he's the major breadwinner. I wish it was reversed, but so his times are quite long. So, you know, he typically leaves at about 7:30 and he's back 7:30.
Oh, wow.
So we just don't have the ability for him, you know, to contribute a lot of time with Archie during the day. So I'm the drop off and pick up, which typically for me looks at about 7:38 drop off for Archie. And I'm typically first in the office, typically 8 a.m. to 8:05, I'm in the office or I'm in my first client meeting. And then I wrap up about 4. So I first in, first off the blocks, very productive in those first few hours. And then, yeah, come home. From 4 to 7:30, it's Archie time. So, you know, we play, we go to the playground, we have a nice dinner together. Meal prepping on Sundays is become a big thing for me.
I was just about to ask you about meal prepping because it would be an absolute have to, wouldn't it? You can't leave that stuff.
Yeah, you become like, resources like the dinner ladies. I've just recently discovered the dinner ladies, which is, you know, they cook and freeze meals and you just throw them in the oven. You just outsource a lot of that stuff. So you either pre-prepare or you outsource. And then, yeah, post 7:30, you know, you wrap up your day. You finish the last of your emails, you debrief for about the day, you took board, and then you're in bed by like 9:30 to do it all again the next day.
Oh, you must sleep well, or at least I hope you sleep well, because you're getting a lot in your day. So from that 4 to 7:30 period, my son on his daycare days, which is 3 days a week, I do the drop off and my husband does the pickup. He's a builder, so he's got a very relaxed schedule. He's a chippy. He will bring him home at around 4, 4:30. To be honest, I'd probably prefer that slightly later so that I get that last bit of work in. And I do feel like I'm often semi on the laptop, semi talking to my husband, semi tending to the child. And I feel like that time is more, you know, you're doing sort of everything and I feel like I'm divided between everyone. How do you focus your time on your son when you're with him and then not sort of get caught up in what's coming through in your emails?
You turn it off. Do not disturb.
Love it. Okay. So you're good at dividing your time. When you're at work, you're at work. When you're at home, you're at home.
It's something I've learned and something I've cultivated. It hasn't happened just overnight. There are times where I'm still in meetings occasionally. And then, you know, it's just the way it happens where you get a 4 o'clock meeting scheduled. But I think people now have become used to sort of post at 4 o'clock. They typically might see Archie on my knee, or, you know, he'll be on the side sticking stickers while I'm sort of chatting. And it's not every day is like that, but if the majority of the days are like that, it's a win for me.
And so you mentioned that your husband is the breadwinner, and it's something that I've really thought about a lot since becoming a mother, is that it is where we can feel like we're unstuck, the gender pay gap, because it's all well and good for us to push for equality and for our partners to do as much as they can. But ultimately, life is really expensive, and money, unfortunately, for a lot of us matters. Maybe some people don't prioritize it as much if they don't live in a city or whatever. But for the most part, we're all scrambling to get the money that we need to live the lives that we want to need. So with that in mind, what changes would you like to see more for fathers and around, I guess, those gender-based norms as opposed to making things easier for mothers?
Hugh Van Kylenberg, he does the Resilience Project, and it's him and his brother and another comedian. And they talk about actually taking responsibility for entire household tasks rather than sort of leaving the mental load completely on their wives. And it doesn't need to be 100 things.
So I've actually interviewed Penny Moody, Hugh's wife,
yes,
from the Imperfects podcast about just this. Sorry, keep going.
Yes, been in the room, the Imperfects. Thank you. We got there. And my friends sent me that podcast, and it's so true. They just need to take a couple full responsibilities of jobs. You know, if that is the bins, it is emptying out the bins, making sure there's rubbish bags.
Not being reminded.
Yeah, it's the entire responsibility is their job. And so you have to decide what that looks like for your family almost. So there are things that Josh can do when he comes home or on Saturday and Sunday that are his entire responsibility. And if we work together and strike that balance, there is a good amount of harmony in our relationship. And with Archie getting older, there are things that we're finding that it's becoming a lot easier. They do get easier as they get older. It's not so overwhelming and exhausting. We've reached toddler stage where, you know, dad can't even open a packet of crisps. You know, mummy has to open the crisps. Why that makes a big difference, you know, the mummy has to butter the toast.
I'm much better at doing the perfect amount of butter and Vegemite on my toast than my husband is, so I can relate to that. He brings me toast every morning. I think it's a pregnancy thing. I don't think it's going to last, but I was saying to my friend, I'm so picky because deep down I'm like, God, I would spread this so much better myself. So maybe, yeah, I'm a little toddler.
You're not good enough.
Yeah, poor guy. So something that I found really interesting, it's been really hard to actually find full-time paid working mothers to interview.
Oh, really?
Obviously. Yeah, I found it really hard. Most of them will at the max work 4 days. A lot of them are almost too busy to take on an interview, which you can understand. And I wanted to know, have you found that? By your surprise, I'm going to guess not, but another podcast guest said that she felt quite lonely because she felt like people have either decided to stay home post-motherhood, they decide to work part-time, or on the opposite end, they decided not to have kids to focus solely on their career. Have you found that you're in a bit of a grey area as a full-time working mother?
Not necessarily. I mean, there are mothers within my mother's group that are full-time, and I'm very lucky in two of the ladies I inadvertently became really good friends with lived up my street. All three of us have boys, and the little boys absolutely adore each other. And I'll say their names, Sophie and Sarah. Both of them work full time. So we've been really lucky in the sense that I've got this really tight knit group where we can share tips or tricks, or, you know, lean on each other for a bit of support or potentially pick up the slack in some areas. Sarah would be running late, but I can hold Henry for 45 minutes until she's able to pick him up and feed him. And, you know, so there is that working dynamic. A lot of the girls I work with are flexible too. Some of them are 3 days, 4 days, some of them are full time. But that being said, you know, some of the ones that are 3 days are single moms, whereas some of the other ones that are 4 days have, you know, a very little one. and they're 8 months old and they've got a four-year-old.
So there's sort of different versions of challenges, and like you could really, there's a million different types of motherhood and working experiences out there.
Yeah, I'd love, if I could, I'd love to drop day down to 4 days. But my going back to work, my entire thought process was the mums that I see working part-time, and this might not be always the case, but the mums that I see working part-time, the 3 or 4 days, inadvertently always end up working 5 days.
Yeah.
Because they just don't have the time with all the life demands to manage that workload in the short amount of time. And us being women, we take on always more than we tend to do. Yeah. We're responsible for. It's just our natures. We grow everything that gets given to us. And so I chose 5 days because I knew that I would then have the time to do the majority of my work to a level I was satisfied with. And it never would encroach on time that I deemed my time.
That's really interesting. And also, hopefully, that means that you're someone that values your time and you know, actually, if I'm working 5 days, I deserve to be paid 5 days, which can be a trap that unfortunately a lot of us fall in. Something that I really loved that we spoke about in our email exchange in the lead up to this was that you're really focusing on yourself at the moment. I feel like that's a real breath of fresh air, given that you work 5 days a week and you're the mother of a toddler. And I don't think I need to tell you that mothers don't do this enough. Most parents don't do this enough. Dads, mums, any parent included. So I would love for you to tell us about this and what made you realize the importance of looking after yourself. Is it something you always knew? Was it burnout and then needing to recalibrate? What does it look like?
It initially started, I think, with all things with self-image, and particularly going back to work after having a baby and you try on your old wardrobe, which may be a little bit outdated because, you know, you've been out of the workforce for a bit long time, but you try it on and you realize my breasts are different and my ribs are different and my hips are different and my thighs are different and my shoes don't fit. And I kind of was in that situation, and I slowly started to sell a lot of my old stuff through consignment stores and buy new stuff. I'm a big advocate for wearing clothes that fit, and I don't keep anything that doesn't fit because it just puts so much pressure that you don't need. So I would always recommend do that. Get rid of whatever doesn't fit. You're never going to fit into it. Don't try fit in it. Don't try and pretend to be the person you were. Just find new stuff. But started to slowly create a new wardrobe that made me feel good. You know, I could put on something in the morning, and albeit maybe it was a bit more uniformy, you know, I've got a very staple wardrobe at the moment that's very minimalist and very easy to put together, but I feel good and it feels functional and it takes off the stress of, oh, you know, I'm on my period, I'm a bit bloated, I don't feel quite well, or I haven't slept very well, I need something a little bit more brighter to make me feel a bit fresher. So it takes off that stress, it takes off that anxiety. And then moving on from that, you know, you start to think, oh, I just want to work a bit on my posture. You know, I'm sitting here for 12 hours a day and my shoulders are hunched, and you've been breastfeeding for, you know, so many months that, you know, your default position is this sort of like hunchback. Your hips maybe, you know, a little bit niggly. You wake up in the morning with a sore back. So I kind of went through this process where I'm like, I now got to look after myself. I've got to really, you know, not necessarily lose weight, but rebuild that strength I used to have. And with exercise, you get the wonderful benefit of mental positivity. You start to feel better about yourself, you know, regardless on whether you may be putting on kilos or removing. You look at yourself different. You feel better. You feel different. And, you know, those first few weeks were so tough, trying to coordinate that time. I was doing Pilates classes at, you know, 5:30 in the morning or at 7:30 at night, and you are just cooked and it's the last thing you want to do. But you start small, easy steps. You start with, you know, that 10-minute walk around the block, and then you go from that 10-minute walk to a 15-minute walk, and then you go from your 15-minute walk to a 20-minute sit-ups, push-ups, lunges. You build it up. Like, it's a constant process of being built up. And then what I found also really good is finding a good psychologist that I really, and that's more so the recent development, not necessarily to unload on, but to find good coping techniques and to redevelop coping techniques. We look at our mothers or we look at our sisters or we look at our friends, and they might seem like they all have their shit together, or, you know, it was done wonderfully. But at the end of the day, we were never really taught coping techniques for anger, or coping techniques for stress, or coping techniques for when you feel overwhelmed, you know.
And talk about motherhood to exacerbate all these feelings, right?
Yeah. So the psychologist for me has been fantastic, and I really enjoy my sessions. And it's something also that Swiss provide, which is why I was very lucky that I started sort of going through that with Swiss as something they provide, and then continuing on because of the benefit I felt through it. But I mean, your GP can give you 6 sessions free, so I highly recommend most people take up that offer. And you just start to create what I always tell myself when it's hard, and when I've compromised time with Archie or compromised time with my husband, is that I'm doing this so I could be a better me.
Yeah.
And by putting myself last or ignoring my needs or saying it doesn't matter or not creating a space for me, I diminish my space in the family. And that's not what we should be doing. We should be making our space the biggest in the family, you know, because we hold everything together. We are the linchpin of our family. We are the foundation. If my baby boy doesn't see his mum taking care of himself, then what kind of parent am I for him when he has a future partner? You know, I want him to see someone as his partner is valued. His partner needs to be respected. His partner needs the space, but also for himself. Like, he should be respected. He should be valued. He should have the space. And that's something you learn, and it's not easy, and you have to really cultivate it, and it's baby steps, and it's every step you take gets bigger than the last step you take. But you have to start taking those steps. You have to start doing it for yourself, doing it for your baby, doing it for your partner, because if you don't, you lose who you are. And motherhood can be all consuming, and you know, you can't define yourself by being a mum, and you can't define yourself about who you are as a career. You need to define yourself as who you are as a person. And as a person, you deserve everything. And mums don't hear it enough.
I love that. What would be your greatest tip for, so the baby steps one is awesome from a practical sense. It's just taking those baby steps, getting whatever time you can, getting 10 minutes if you can for yourself, and building up from there. What would you say to those mums that are either just keep saying they don't have the time, or perhaps they don't feel worthy of having that time to themselves, or they don't think they can justify it? What would be your biggest tip for them to actually find those little baby steps of space?
I'm a real structured and routine person. So for me, I reverted back to something I learned in year 12, where you essentially map out your day in beautiful colors. And, you know, you highlight when you're sleeping, you highlight, you know, roughly when you're having dinner and when you're working, and you basically schedule. And even if it's, you know, 15 minutes on a Tuesday, that's your 15 minutes. And you start with that small block.
So you map it out so that then it's like almost a promise to you.
Yeah. You find the time, you schedule it in, you tell your partner, this is my time. I'm going for a walk. I'm going to, you know, sit in a dark room and cry for 45 minutes. Doesn't matter. Like, they're all good. But just, you have to create that space. It is overwhelming and it's exhausting. And it's not perfect. You don't have to do it every day. You don't have to do it every week. But you just have to start the process of finding that space. And the more time you allocate to finding that space or committing to that space, and that's why I say start small. Don't don't say I need, you know, 3 hours on that Saturday. It's not achievable. Start small. Start with a 15-minute walk around the block. 15 minutes. Put the baby down. Husband in charge. Leave the house.
Get out of there.
Just get out. Shoes by the front door. Get out of there.
And you do realize that it is achievable if you start small too. And then it might eventually be those 3 hours on a Saturday, but you've started small, you've reaped the benefits, you know that you can do it, and then you build up from there. So I think making time and promising time to yourself is such a great tip. Now, Natasha, you are very busy, so I'm going to let you go after this question. Something else I loved from our email exchange was how you described moments or days. And I think you were talking both in motherhood and in paid work that can be magical. And then there are other ones that can be grinding. What are you most proud of when it comes to the way you are making work work?
I think my results. So being sort of in a sales-based role, it is very numbers driven and you do see results, and that makes me incredibly motivated and really pushes me. And I do love that aspect of my role, and I do love that I find I get mentally challenged, because that's probably the thing I miss the most. I mean, not saying that having a baby is not mentally challenging. You just feel like you're contributing, you know, you feel like the adult you are, you feel like the intelligent, smart, witty, funny person you are, and that you're working towards something and you're achieving something. I couldn't imagine working in a role where you did not feel fulfilled and you were just doing it to do it. And that's why I really encourage people to look for something that brings them joy, because life is so short and moments are so short and you're giving so much of your time up to be there that you really need to find something you love and where you're supported. But it's hard. It can be hard. You can be exhausted. You know, you can... Archie's going through a stage where I think he's learnt that, you know, we respond to him when he cries out in the night. So it's, yeah, like a game of, you know, me going into his room, and sometimes it's, you know, again, 3-4 hours in the night where, you know, I'm sitting there patting him down or, you know, talking to him and getting him to resettle, trying to convince the 2-year-old it's not time to get up.
It's dark out there. Stay in bed.
I awake, mummy. I wake. And you get to work and, you know, you're 4 hours down of sleep and you got to be there and you got to switch on and, you know, your thoughts aren't cohesive and you can't carry a sentence and you feel like you are just one step away from, you know, falling off the edge of a cliff. But when they run to you at the end of the day at childcare is brilliant. When you get those nighttime cuddles and you're reading a book, it's brilliant. When you get their little hand in yours, it's brilliant.
Like, you're going to make me cry.
It's a tough job, but, you know, it is a rewarding job, and you can definitely make it work, but you have to make it work where you feel valued. If you're not valued, then it's not working at work. And as mums, we don't do that. And it's time we really do that. We have to make ourselves valued more than anything.
That is such a beautiful sentiment to end with.
We do a big job.
We do a huge job, no matter what type of job. If you are mothering, you are doing a huge job. That is such a lovely sentiment to end with. Thank you so much for sharing your story, Natasha.
It's lots of fun, and I hope someone gets something out of this.
They will.
You're welcome to post my details too if anyone wants to reach out or chat or wants to understand anything more. I'm happy to sort of make time and space for that too.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to Ready or Not. If you liked the show, please tell your friends, subscribe, or write a review. You can also find us on Instagram at readyornot.pod. That's it for today. We'll see you next time.